Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
It's lovely to see you all. I hope you've had a wonderful sleep. And Sheena's pointing a finger to remind me to say good morning to everyone who's joining on Zoom. Hi, Zoomers. Thank you for coming, everyone, on this very windy morning, actually. And this is a dual header theme talk by myself. Speak up. I'm speaking quite loudly, I would have thought, but I'll try and project. So this is a dual header theme talk with myself and Laura Cox, who's joining us from York. So we're sharing this theme talk between us. And we're going to light our chalice now. I'm going to light our chalice. And these are opening words from, I think she's a UU minister in America called Pat Aribi Lichty. We come from many places along different paths, bringing different truths. We come with different histories and different realities. And yet we come together as one people with faith that we can use our differences to heal ourselves and each other and to bring wholeness to a fractured world. We come seeking to find community, to find acceptance of who we are. In this place, may we find others who are much like us, and others who are much different. May our lit chalice remind us that we are a people taught by different stories, with many voices, but always one people, working for a world where love creates justice and justice gives birth to peace. Those are our opening chalice lighting words. And now Laura's going to give us some opening words.
So these opening words come from our much-loved poet, Mary Oliver. It's When I Am Among Trees. When I am among the trees, especially the willows and the honey locust, equally the beech, the oaks and the pines, they give off such hints of gladness. I would almost say that they save me and daily. I am so distant from the hope of myself in which I have goodness and discernment and never hurry through the world but walk slowly and bow often. Around me, the trees stir in their leaves and call out, "Stay a while." The light flows from their branches and they call again. "It's simple," they say. "And you too have come into the world to do this, to go easy, to be filled with light and to shine."
Laura. Now, in time-honoured fashion, I have a story for you. And this is a story. There's really a bit of a woodland theme going on, carried through from yesterday into today, which is a bit of continuity, is always reassuring. Anyway, I was going to tell you about this time. Not so long ago, there was a very, very ancient wood. I mean, when I say ancient, I mean, it was really, really, really ancient. It wasn't one of those woods which have been an open hillside or a field or a fen. It had always been trees. There'd never been a time when there hadn't been any trees there. Even before the earliest people ever roamed there. And some of those trees were really, really, really old. Now it's true People used this wood, this forest, for gathering wood, for cutting down wood for buildings, for firewood, collecting the nuts and berries and all that sort of thing. And they even tolerated those rather irritating coppices when they came into the wood. But you know, coppices come and go, the wood was there always. Sorry, no, that was a bit... Anyway, so it went, timeless, seemed eternal, no change at all. Until one day some strange rumours began to be heard by the younger trees and the saplings at the outer part of the wood. Those younger trees still listened to the chatter and the voices of the birds and the animals that came to feed and to roost there and gather the berries and the nuts. And they spoke about something that was happening far across the fields beyond the wood. Men with great machines which pushed aside the earth, which pushed aside the plants, filling in and burying the streams, destroying ancient nesting places and burrows, and laying a huge white black trail of tar that covered everything along which eventually cars and trucks would travel. But worse than that, the animals and the birds said, that implacable black trail was heading straight for the old wood. Rubbish, scoffed the oldest and biggest oak. My great-great-granddad went to be a mast in Nelson's flagship, but I'm still here. Balderdash, said the great pine. My great-granny, my third cousin, my two aunties, and that dodgy great-uncle went to make the big lock gates on yonder canal. I'm still here. It isn't possible, said a snooty old beech tree. My mother's cousin's next-door neighbour's half-brother was used to repair the king's throne, and he's got a nice coat of gold paint to prove it. But the younger trees were still worried. Their roots were younger. The delicate tendrils and mycelia that connected them could sense unusual vibrations in the ground, strange rumblings that were different from anything they'd felt before. Nothing like the deep, slow rumble and crack of the earth as the seasons change. So they whispered and rustled in a conference that went on all night. Yes, the squirrel had told a small hazel bush about machines. Yes, a tiny harvest mouse had whispered to the young rowan about the big black track. Yes, a traumatized frog had fearfully described to the cherry how her pond had been buried. But the hierarchy of the wood was very difficult to challenge. Young trees should be seen and not heard. Speak only if spoken to. And the idea that they would know better than a 500-year-old elder, unthinkable. What shall we do? Who will speak for us? The old ones won't listen, they asked themselves, and the creatures who came to feed and shelter. No one knew what to do. Until an old crow, scraggy, scarred with no feathers on his head, who was older than quite a few of the trees, said, what about eldest? Not Elvis, eldest. The young trees, animals and birds exclaimed in amazement, eldest never speaks. And some said, eldest can't speak. And others said, eldest Soots is so old, she never learnt to speak. Eldest was the most ancient tree in the wood. thought to be at least 2,000 years old. So in the early dawn of the most beautiful spring morning, the birds and the animals went and gathered round eldest. Let me introduce you. Without the waitress back there. The old trees of the wood shrugged and scoffed. Eldest couldn't speak. Too old to even think, they thought. But the younger trees leant towards her and began to tell eldest about the coming road. When they had finished, silence. And then more silence. But then, with the deepest voice that seemed to be like the voice of the very earth itself, Eldis spoke. Where is the river? Where is the River Rush? River Rush? River Rush, exclaimed the older trees. She hasn't been seen since the great frost of 1709. She froze solid, and when the spring eventually came, she melted, then just vanished into the ground. That old mossy ditch is all that remains. You must call her, said eldest. She did not go. She just runs in the caverns deep below this place. Call her now. There's no time to spare. And so they did. And to be honest, it would be really quite helpful if you could help as well. River Rush, come forth. River Rush, come forth. Silence. A little bit more welly, as they say colloquially. River Rush, come forth. I think I can hear something. One more time might really, really help. River Rush, come forth. And fifth. Silence. And then a deep rumble, and then a louder rumble, and then a mighty roar, as a great roaring tumult of water sprang from a pile of old rocks in the ditch. This is where it kind of falls apart a bit. The river rushed out in a mighty torrent through the wood, down the hill, across the fields, and finally encountered the earthwork and the new-laid tarmac of the coming highway. The new embankments were soon washed away, the tarmac broken and scattered, and the concrete bridges tilting and cracked, and the huge machines scattered like children's toys. The workmen scratched their heads. The engineers looked at their plans, and as you might have guessed it, the accountants did their sums. And they all soon realised, perhaps this wasn't such a good place to build a road after all. And the project, just like HS2, Northern Leg, was cancelled. And the old wood? Well, they all went back to their old slow ways and put up with the occasional coppicer. Except now they have the most beautiful river running right through the wood. And in the deepest, darkest part of the wood, eldest is still there, but has never uttered another single word. That's the story. Okay. So we're now going to sing. It's Hymn in the Purple Book, number 3, Above the Moon, Earth Rises. It's not very familiar, but I think the tune is relatively easy, so hopefully you'll be able to pick it up. Three.
Trees, for good reason. The oldest tree in the world is centuries old, and the tallest Hyperion, is over 115 meters tall. These are the things of legend all around us, ancient and silent, with a deep and undeniable power. It was the trees that called me to the earth. In the spring, they sprouted green, an unfaltering canopy of consistency in the turbulence of my childhood. In summer, sunlight dappled their boughs as they swayed gently in the warm breeze. In the autumn, they shed their leaves like scales, smooth and slippery and certain. And then in winter, like twisted works of art, they frightened me, yet it was they who were vulnerable and exposed. They, them, trees that felt like people, like ancestors, like great, 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 great grandmothers. Old, wise, and unshakable. I worshipped the trees long before I knew what a god was. I buried offerings beneath their roots, beads, notes, and secret written confessions. I knelt in the mulch of the forest church. I was pagan before I knew what pagan even meant. I heard a sort of voice that whispered in the pom-pom cherry blossom. I heard it when I shimmied up the branches of my favourite climbing tree and when I tapped the spike tips of the monkey puzzle tree that grew much, much taller than we ever expected it to. That voice beckoned me to magical portals between kissing branches, and it hummed to me on grassy hills. The path less travelled has a siren song, and once you hear it, you always follow. We can all listen to the voice. Hear it. There are some people who do not hear the voice for many reasons, and there are those who deliberately block their ears. So, it is up to us to give words to the voice, to turn the voice into something tangible. I'm not sure what those words are, but I feel that if the voice that for me came from the trees, could speak as we speak to each other, perhaps it would say, "We have always been here. We were here long before you. We ask nothing of you. We give to you freely, and yet you take all from us." If my heart did not break when I say those words, then I might be able to convince myself that they are far from the truth, but something tells me that they are not. And so I act with my words and my body, because what else is there to do? The trees cannot move. The flowers have no defense. And we are, by our very existence, threatening theirs. Humans do not live in harmony with nature. I do not live in harmony with nature, however much I try. But try is what we have to do. What does that look like? You know, I am sure, what it looks like. You do not need me to tell you. And perhaps you are already doing all or many of these things. But how loudly are you shouting? What words do you give to the voice that we all hear?
So I wonder, who are your trees? The trees that seem completely entwined with the story of your life. Because trees are not just large plant life, but masters or mistresses of our human narrative, or at least our co-travelers, growing into the stories of our lives. Like ivy or climbing roses, transforming us little by little from animal creatures into creatures of poetry and myth. It isn't just oxygen, fruit, leaf mulch, shade, bird, insect life, drainage, hiding places, shelter, timber, firewood that they give us. They give us meaning. And many of you might agree, or you probably wouldn't be here today, with the psychotherapist and Holocaust survivor Viktor Frankl, that the search for meaning is what gives our life its purpose and its beauty. Why is it that such meaning attaches to the trees? There's probably many, many, many reasons, but here's three of them. Firstly, they're alive like we are. They're often pretty big, and human beings tend to be impressed by big things. And they live a long time, which impresses human beings even more. Much of the green world, which we also dearly love, is nevertheless touched by the sadness of transience. It flourishes one season, and by October, November, it's just ready for the bonfire. And as Laura's just reminded us, they impress us as children, both for their size, the life within and around them, but perhaps most of all for their seeming foreverness. They were here before we were born, and so they must know about the world. They must be privy to its deepest magic, which of course they are. And maybe even these trees of our childhood will actually outlive us and carry our memory forward. Some other child will play where we did and wonder about the ancestors, of whom we will be by then one of them. But even more, their very ancientness blends easily into mythical time. You could call it the dream time, if you like, of human history. And in that place, thousands of mythical trees grow. The singing, ringing tree, the faraway tree, the white tree of Gondar, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, the tree of life in the heavenly city at the end of time, the one whose leaves will be given for the healing of the nations, Yggdrasil, the old Norse world tree, which I think was an ash tree actually, around which all creation is gathered. Yggdrasil is imagined as the kind of DNA of human culture, sitting right at the centre around which all history and stories and life gathers. Asvata, the sacred fig tree found in the Bhagavad Gita, which is one of my favourites because its roots are in heaven and its branches are in the earth. It reverses the natural trajectory of a tree. And that's also identified as the Bodhi tree under which the Buddha attained enlightenment. And I'm quite sure you can think of countless more. But here, back in Old England, that sense of the tree embodying time is captured really beautifully by the early 19th century peasant poet John Clare, who actually Kate quoted on our first theme speech on, I forget what day it is now, Monday, I guess. And this is what John Clare said in his poem, The Fallen Elm. Old favourite tree, thou'st seen times change lower, but change till now did never come to thee, for time beheld thee as his sacred dower, and nature claimed thee her domestic tree. Clare's old elm murmured in our chimney top the sweetest anthem autumn ever made. It's a beautiful masterpiece of pastoral, but it's also deeply political, lamenting the loss of the tree cut down in the name of progress and of freedom. And the freedom that Clare is lamenting is the very same freedom that our contemporary free marketeers claim, the freedom to despoil, to tear up, to enclose, and to fence off, by which depriving the poor man, as Clare says, of grazing for his single cow, and driving the very wild animals away so the rabbit had not where to make his den. But most desperately for Clare, destroying the poetry of his life and his world, and as you may know, eventually destroying his sanity. I always think that enclosure, the modern word for enclosure is privatisation, same thing. He was dealing with exactly the same tensions and problems that we are today. I'm just thinking about Laura's words which she gave to the trees. We have always been here. We were here long before you. We ask nothing of you. We give to you freely, and yet you take all from us. So I could tell you about my trees, from the old willow that made patterns on the curtains of my childhood bedroom in those dreadful days when you had to go to bed when it was still light and you could hear your brother playing outside still, to the huge old oak tree that actually does the same in Sheena and our bedroom at our house in Godalming. I gave it a name, that great big oak tree in the park behind. I call it Arkino Mathbog. There's only one slight problem with that. I'm not a very adventurous person, so it took 3 years for me to eventually mosey around into the park behind us, only to discover it was two trees lined up behind each other. So Arkino Mathbog, part of it's Arkino and the other bit's Mathbog. It'll do. But now I'm going to ask you, rather than listen to me anymore, I'm going to ask you to tell each other about your trees. They may be real, they may be remembered, they may be mythical, they may be trees from loved stories or poems, but trees that seem to be connected to your own deep myths, the story of your life, the story of your imagination, this wonderful, powerful energy that gives us life and reality. So turn to your next door neighbour in twos and threes, I'm inviting you to do this, and tell each other about your trees, the trees that give the sense of who you are, what gives meaning to your life, your own sense of the past and the future. And I'm going to invite you to do that. After a certain time, the conversation will be ending with some music. You can wind it down within that music, and I'm going to give a nod to Jane when to start it. So please It's your time to speak.
Paradise put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. Charge the people a dollar and a half just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, or leave me the birds and the bees. Go, that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam, and a big yellow taxi took away my old man. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. I said, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? hippie paradise. Put up a parking lot. Hippie paradise. Put up a parking lot. Hippie paradise. Put up a parking lot.
What special trees came into your mind? Were they trees you climbed as a child? Trees you travelled a long way to visit? Or were they the trees that paint patterns on your bedroom wall, like Rob's Arkino and Math Bog? Now, how would you feel if your special tree was cut down? And what if your special tree had seeded and the ancestors of your special tree had also been cut down, stopping the sap line? Imagine that no one else would ever enjoy the shade of their leaves, feel the unique bumps and ridges of their bark, or breathe in their reassuring woody smell. Now imagine a world where there were only a small dwindling number of very old trees, just like eldest, protected by groups of committed nature lovers. Imagine those trees were all that we had left, a reminder of what we allowed ourselves to lose. We're already seeing this play out with species across the whole range of animals, plants, insects, and aquatic life. Nature is resilient, and our beloved trees are resilient. And I'm sure that we've all heard the almost convincing argument that it's arrogant to think that humans could destroy nature. But we are destroying it. A few miles outside of York, my hometown where I am now, is a power station owned by Drax Group. Drax Power Station is the UK's single highest carbon emitter. It burns biomass, namely wood pellets, as fuel. Biomass sounds good, doesn't it? Well, the government certainly thinks so, because Drax receives renewable energy subsidies, taxpayers' money, to the tune of about 2 million a day. But where do those wooden pellets come from? They come from monocultures of trees planted in marginalized low-income communities across the world. These trees are then cut down, turned into pellets using a toxic process, and then they're shipped over to Drax's power station in Selby, UK, to go up in smoke. Trees go back, sure, but it takes a minimum, absolute minimum of 44 years. When you think about the sheer number of trees that are being cut down and burnt by this corporate giant, it's impossible to replenish them within those timeframes. If this all sounds a bit complicated, don't worry. In summary, we're burning trees. Lots of them. And that's heartbreaking. That is something to worry about. A couple of weeks ago, a group of activists attempted to bring Drax's deeply worrying practices to light. The aim was to hold a climate camp close to the power station, and we would offer workshops, listening spaces, talks, and a sense of community in the face of a huge corporate threat. But the camp was shut down immediately. 27 activists, including one of my very close friends, were arrested. He had his electric car confiscated. It was devastating. After months and months of planning, the camp couldn't go ahead. But the event sparked a wave of new interest in and scrutiny of Drax. The Guardian published an article that questioned the corporation, and The Ecologist did the same. The activists who would have been at the camp continued to hold meetings and workshops in venues in York and Sheffield, including York's Quaker Meeting House. I wonder, would the Unitarian Chapel in York have opened its doors to the activists? I don't know. Would your chapel have opened its doors or the space in which you worship? Despite pushback from the police, the activists attended a peaceful demonstration outside of Drax on Sunday, the 11th of August. The media interest continues. As activists, and Rob will agree with me here, we don't often know what's going to happen. We just do things and we accept the consequences of our actions. And we continue to take those actions and continue to accept whatever those consequences might be. Because we have to. Our motivations are different, of course. Mine will be different from Rob's or from any other activist. Mine are as much spiritual as they are ideological and, I hope, intellectual. As a Unitarian and a nature lover, I do feel very strongly that it is my duty, and I don't use that word lightly, to protect the natural world and every living thing within it, even that annoying fly that's been buzzing around my room for this entire past hour. I want to protect the trees, whether they are my own special trees or forests of monocultures in the global south. For me, taking action is a spiritual practice, practice being the operative word, something that you actively do. And if you feel strongly enough about what is happening in and to the world that we love, then I really strongly encourage you to turn your sentiment into action as well. All of this can feel very exhausting. Trust me, I know. And there are so many obligations and expectations placed on us already. We are tugged in so many different directions. So how do we keep our energy and our hope? You don't have to sit in a tent outside of Drax Power Station. You know what is available to you, and you know what you are willing and able to do. Sustainable living is the base level, and this includes sustaining your energy. But in a world where our consumption of resources outpaces the rate at which we replenish them, just like those trees, we are going to need to do a bit more than live sustainably. So I offer you this. If you're able, place your hands together. In your hands, you hold the seed of a tree that has not yet been planted. This tree will be someone's special tree, just like the trees you spoke about earlier. The seed you hold can be a real seed, or it can be metaphorical. Whatever it is, you can hold that seed every single day. Holding the seed is important. But we live at such a critical time that holding the seed is simply not enough. The seed in your hands wants to be planted. Each day, as part of your affirmations or your blessings, you can ask yourself this question: Am I going to plant this seed? Where? How? Because in a world of mindless destruction, we are the planters.
So, Laura has brought us nicely into a time of quiet reflection and prayer. And we're going to have a bit of quiet now to think about this. And as Laura suggested, you might want to reflect on the seed which she's invited us to hold in our hands. And that seed could be real, of course. It could be a dream or an aspiration or a hope, a commitment or a simple intention. Something that you think will contribute to the reversal of the unsustainable destruction of our natural environment. Perhaps it should be something new to your world, to your consciousness, but especially new to you. Perhaps it could be something actually that seems too far from your competence at the moment, beyond the reach of what you can manage to do. But something perhaps you've wanted to do, but you've never dared to. The Christian spiritual teacher Cynthia Bourgeau, I went to a seminar last year, and she used the analogy of the soprano reaching for a high note. Now, I know nothing about singing, but she says, you don't reach for the note, you reach above the note and you come down on it. So this is an exercise in not saying, what are my limitations, but what dare I wish for? Failure never matters. The intention matters. The trying matters. Even the imagining matters. All those things really matter. So I invite you now in for a couple of minutes silence to think about what that seed which you've held in your hands might be. Don't think how you're going to put this into action. This isn't the time to do that. Just to dare, to dream, to reach as high as your imagination will take you. And don't worry about how it's going to happen, how it's going to come into place, if your energy is up to it. This isn't the world in which we live. We, as a religious community, a spiritual community, live in the field of grace. So I invite you to do that for a couple of minutes, and then in true summer school style, reach for your post-it note. And in a couple of minutes, Nick's going to play some music, and we'll gather up the post-it notes, and we're not going to be too pressed for time, so there will be time to read some of these out in the form of a prayer for the community. So I invite you now to spend a little time thinking about that. Thank you. It's a bit like the raffle, this, isn't it? These are prayers, intentions, wishes, commitments from you all. Don't worry about whether you can ever achieve them. I've got to speak up. I've turned the volume up. Okay, sorry. Don't worry if you can never achieve them. It doesn't matter. Intentions are not goals. Intentions are a vision for the future. Tall trees growing on rootstock over 10,000 years old in the Tasmanian wilderness. That's like a haiku. Increase self-ease to revitalize my resolve. I'll have some of that. Support alternative to charcoal for cooking. For cooking. It's in something. Thank you. Learn from my mother's extreme recycling habit rather than be annoyed by it. Thank you. I have a small garden, having recently downsized. I used to knock down and have removed, and in the space, a small grove of unusual trees will be planted. Life and biodiversity will increase. What will my next 44 years look like? What would I have done? What world would I leave behind? Prioritize the garden. Stay in it, despite the weather. Prune and plant. I would plant my seed in the middle of Parliament until a forest replaced the building. Trees will plant themselves if we just stop pulling them out. So, don't just do something. Sit there. Perfect call to those of us who like to do nothing whatsoever. A sustainable life is a loved place which has a positive impact beyond its boundaries. It's beautiful. Positive impact beyond its boundaries. So never forget your energy, which you cultivate, makes so much difference on all sorts of levels that we can't even begin to understand. Plant a tree, this is simple, in the front garden. How much better to plant a tree in the front garden than your motor car? So many people do now. A garden where we can actually grow things. Still fading? No? It's all right. I'm going to do two more. These are lovely. I wish we'd just started this about half an hour ago. We could have done a whole lot of them. Sign a petition that supports sustainable living. Do sign the petitions. I know sometimes it seems almost pointless, but it isn't. Any action at all brings its own action with it. Any small bit of momentum moves you and moves your life as well in different ways. Little things open up to big things. I'm teaching my collective grandmothers to suck eggs now, aren't I? This is lovely. Compile an exhibition of tree photos and stories to inspire and move people. Those are beautiful prayers. I think I might keep them actually, and in the long reaches of the winter I'll transcribe them into a complete text. Thank you everyone for those. And this is a time of prayer, and we're just concluding. This is a prayer of St. Teresa of Avila, and it's translated by Andrew Harvey, who wrote a very inspiring book called Spiritual Activism. Andrew Harvey is a very interesting person. Some of you may well have encountered him. And this is his translation of the prayer of St. Teresa of Avila. The divine now has no body on earth but ours, no hand but ours, no feet but ours. Ours are the eyes through which to look out the divine's compassion to the world. Ours are the feet with which the divine is to go about doing good. Ours are the hands with which the divine is to bless all beings now. So let it be so. Amen. And before we come to sing our last hymn, I'm going to do the notices. This is a congregation that has its notices in the service, not after it. On the 14th of September, Unitarians for Climate Justice, of which Laura and myself are kind of facilitators, we're having a gathering at Cross Street Chapel in Manchester. It's called Faith in Our Future Number 2, because you might have missed number 1, which was in Kensington Chapel, in Jane's Chapel in Kensington in February. And it's a day event, and we're having Professor Jeff Levermore's coming to talk to us, who's our current GA president. And in the afternoon we're having a workshop by a scientist called Dr. Abby Perrin. I think she's a bioscientist, as I remember, but she's also a climate activist and a member of Extinction Rebellion as well. So she's running a workshop. We're going to have a climate cafe, and we're going to have an act of worship which will be led by Laura Dobson in the afternoon. That's Cross Street Chapel in Manchester. We particularly wanted to have it in the north because we're aware that Unitarians for Climate Justice has had a lot of stuff in the south. So I've got some extra leaflets. Those of you who particularly attend chapels in the north, if you'd like to take a few leaflets to put in your chapels or promote it, that'd be really, really good, because it'd be nice to have people there. And just on that point, one thing you can do if you want to, is to get involved with Unitarians for Climate Justice. And you don't have to be a militant or anything. We have a very lively WhatsApp group. There's lots of interesting information on it. And we post announcements on another thread, and there is a Facebook page. And it's a way for Unitarians to connect who are concerned about the climate crisis. And we do go on events. We even got a message from Chris Packham at the Restore Nature Now march in June. He mentioned Unitarians for Climate Justice. The reason was that you came right at the end of the list of attenders. So the first one, I can't remember, it was probably the Aardvark Protection Society to the Unitarians for Climate Justice. Action for Elephants, there you go. So there you go. Any publicity is good publicity is what I'd say. Okay, thank you everybody. So our final hymn is number 247 in the Green Book, A World of Wonder.
The rain clouds, the lark's song on high. We gaze up in wonder above to the sky. The green grassy blade, the grasshopper's sound, the creatures of shade that live in the ground. The dark soil, the moist soil where plants spring to birth. We look down in wonder below in the earth. The glad joys that heal, the tears in our eyes, the longings we feel, the light of surprise. Our night dreams, our daydreams, our thoughts ranging wide. We live with a whole world of wonder inside.
I'm going to hand over to Laura now for our closing words.
These words come from Dolores La Chapelle. We give away our thanks to the earth which gives us our home. We give away our thanks to the rivers and lakes which give away their water. We give away our thanks to the trees which give away fruit and nuts and much more. We give away our thanks to the wind, which brings rain to water the plants. We give away our thanks to the sun, which gives away warmth and light. All beings on earth, the trees, the animals, the wind, and the rivers, give away to one another. So all is in balance. And we give away our promise to begin to learn how to stay in balance with the earth. So may it be.
Something.
I'm very tall, just get the word up. So,